Yeah, my name's Rick Foster. I'm an extension entomologist at Purdue University. My responsibilities are managing insect pests of fruits and vegetables. And most of my work is related to sweet corn or melons, since melons are one of the big vegetable crops in Indiana.
This week, speaking at the Great Lakes Fruit, Vegetable, and Farm Market Expo, what have been some of your talks this week and meeting with growers?
Okay, I gave a talk yesterday about managing corn earworms on sweet corn. Corn earworm is the most important insect pest of sweet corn. And the gist of my talk was comparing different types of sprayers and which ones work best. And so, you know, we had some videos and things that showed what kind of coverage we get. We used water-sensitive cards to evaluate the amount of coverage, and then looked at the level of control that we received. And what we found was that using a boom sprayer with drop nozzles provided the best control, and air blast sprayers are good for about four rows, but beyond that the control starts to diminish pretty rapidly. And then a boom sprayer without drop nozzles was intermediate. So that was kind of the main thrust of the sweet corn talk yesterday. And then today I talked about the difficulty of managing insect pests on melon crops while not harming pollinators. And so we have this innate conflict. We got insect pests, but we have insect pollinators as well. So we want to kill the pests, but we want to keep the pollinators healthy. And the insecticides that we use, in many cases, will kill the pollinators as well as the pest. And so I just been working on this for quite a while and developing best management practices. And so I presented my best management practices for cantaloupes, which I've done a lot of work on, and then more recently I've been working on watermelons. So I had some preliminary recommendations on what to do in watermelons.
Protecting pollinators, hot topic no matter what you grow. How important are pollinators to all of agriculture, and why this really has continued to get more attention?
Well, certainly in the production of cucurbit crops, so pumpkins, squash, watermelons, cantaloupes, cucumbers, all of those are entirely dependent upon pollinators in order to produce fruit. The same with most of our fruit crops, you know, apples, peaches, pears, cherries, all those sort of things. Pollinators are just essential. And if we don't have pollinators, or if the pollinators aren't doing their job, then we end up with no fruit. And so it's a real critical part of production. Now, if you look at row crops like corn and soybeans, pollinators are not really essential there. Okay, but particularly with many of the fruits and a large percentage of the vegetables, pollinators are really important. So in recent years, there's been a lot of concern about honeybee health, with varroa mites and other things reducing their survival rates. But then more recently, the neonicotinoid insecticides, which are widely used on a lot of fruit and vegetable crops, have been shown to be extremely toxic to pollinators. And one of the reasons why they're really good insecticides is because they're systemic, so they move throughout the plant. And so wherever you put them on, it will move throughout the plant and kill the pest. But the problem is they also move to the pollen and the nectar where the bees are going to be feeding, and so then they can get a lethal dose of insecticide there. And then more recently, we've been looking at alternative pollinators besides honeybees. And in our watermelon studies this year, we found that 57% of the pollinator visits to the flowers were honeybees, but the other 43% were other pollinators. So there are bumblebees, sweat bees, some flies, and then some other pollinators as well. So so we can't just focus exclusively on honeybees, although they're certainly important, but the other pollinators are also important in giving us the levels of pollination that we're looking for.
Let's talk about some of those best management practices. What can farmers do to protect their crops and the pollinators?
Okay, probably the most important thing is to involve yourself in integrated pest management. And that's a philosophy of how to manage pests where we don't just routinely treat with pesticides, we treat when we need to. So for example, we found that in cantaloupes, if we use seeds that are treated with one of these systemic insecticides, we really don't get any improved insect control. And so probably we ought not to use those because there's a possibility of harming the pollinators and no benefit to the grower. And then a lot of growers will put on an insecticide at planting time, which is, again, systemically moved throughout the plant and can affect the pollinators. And so what we found in our research is that if we use the low rate of that insecticide rather than the high rate, we get the same level of control and we end up with less residue in the pollen later on. So a recommendation or best management practice would be use the low rate. And then finally, we want people to scout their fields and only treat when they exceed the economic threshold, which is an average of one beetle per plant. And so if they do that, we don't want them to apply one of the neonicotinoid insecticides, which may harm the bees. We want them to use a pyrethroid insecticide. Now, those will also harm bees, but they're not systemic. So our recommendation then is to make those applications in the late afternoon, evening, or night when the pollinators have left the field and the flowers have closed up. And that way we'll reduce the impact that those applications will have on the pollinators.
Any thoughts on how drone technology or other technology could limit the use in more direct targeted areas where there is a pest outbreak?
Yeah, that's a pretty exciting area of research. And, the difficulty is how do you fly a drone over a crop and identify where the insects are and where they are not. And we're really just getting started with that. I had a student about 10 or 12 years ago who did a study. We weren't using drones. We didn't have those, but we used spectrophotometry with other kinds of equipment. And we were able to detect Japanese beetle grub damage in turf grass about 2 weeks earlier with that technology than we could with the naked eye. And so if you just think about the idea that when you have insect damage or even disease pressure on a crop, it may affect the reflectance in the near infrared range. And if we can detect that, maybe we can figure out, okay, this is where we need to treat and other places we don't need to treat. But we're really getting just at the beginning of learning that technology, and so we got a lot of work to do before we're ready to go with that.
Any last thoughts, Rick, to wrap us up with?
Tomorrow I'm giving a talk about some technology issues, the Z traps, which is an electronic pheromone trap, which counts the insects when they come into the trap and then transmits the fact that insect was caught to a remote site. And so what that would do would allow growers to know if they have insects in their pheromone trap without leaving their office. And so, to me, that's a technology that has the potential to increase the likelihood that people will use pheromone traps because they don't have to go out and check them every day. And so I'm really big on that technology. I did some work this year using the Z-trap for corn earworms, and that one was not successful because the trap design is not appropriate for catching corn earworms. But for some other insects, such as the western bean cutworm, it worked really well.